Hi, I'm Dan Parent, and I work for Archie Comics and do Die Kitty Die, and you're listening to 11 O'Clock Comics.
Excellent, my friend. So quick and flawless. I can't believe it.
Perfect every time.
Amazing. Amazing.
I don't have a thousand of these. I feel like you could just let the guy rest. Just use the same one every week.
No!
Unacceptable. Nope. Nope. Can't do it.
He's getting older. His vocal cords are getting older.
My drink roll call is going to be fucking hot tea with chamomile and fucking lemons.
It's just bad mojo.
Drink on the set of Lord of the Rings.
It's just, it's the whole, it's the fluctuation of the goddamn temperatures. It's fucking 70s 1 second, it's in the fucking 40s the next. It's with the wet and everything over here, it's insane.
It just rained out here out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Craziness. And this is all craziness. Because it's, you got to stop talking. It's 11 O'Clock Comics, episode 912. And I'm wondering why I did this, Vince B.
Can I talk now? Is it?
I guess.
Then I guess I'm David A. Price.
And if you didn't notice, Jason is still on assignment. Yeah. So we brought in a buddy to help us out with the talk, and you know him, you love him. He took a couple of minutes away from his rigorous grind to spend some time with us, and we love him for that. Everybody, it's Tony Fleece.
Hey, gang. Happy to be back. Thank you for having me.
This is not part of the press junket, by the way.
I don't have any final order cutoffs coming up to tell you about. I mean, I do, but
yeah. But you and you can, but Uncanny Valley comes out next week.
That's true. On Wednesday, after you're hearing this, you can go to the store and buy Uncanny Valley from Boom Studios.
Yes.
Myself and Dave Wachter.
And I want to hear about this glow-in-the-dark cover for
Carol.
Nice.
Pretty exciting.
You'll hear all about that right after we tell you who made this possible. Mm. CheapGraphicNovels.com. CheapGraphicNovels.com gets you the stuff you want at the price you want to pay. If you're in the market for omnibus editions, who's not? Trade paperback collections, OGNs, manga, all that stuff, art books, anything with a spine, you can go to CheapGraphicNovels.com and chances are extremely good you're going to find it for prices that are far lower than everywhere else. And once you find that thing that you've been looking for, it's there. Just got to search for it. You'll find it. Order it, and then you will receive an email confirmation that says, thank you for ordering from CheapGraphicNovels.com. You're our buddy. And you reply to that email confirmation saying, 11 O'Clock Comics sent me, my dude. And Max is going to give you free shipping on your next order. And that's when you just back up the U-Haul and order everything that they have because you're getting free shipping. See how it works? CheapGraphicNovels.com. Just go there. You will save a lot of money.
I saw Max from CheapGraphicNovels.com just 6 days ago on Friday, the Friday of WonderCon. I went down and signed at their sister store, Pulp Fiction, in Long Beach. And I want everyone to know that's listening that when you spend money at CheapGraphicNovel.com, what Max does is he turns that into Godzilla figures, like the kind of vinyl ones that Vince likes. He likes to get Hedoras. And then he also likes to turn it into original art. Sometimes he's going through a real Godzilla thing right now. So
I know. You're so funny. He likes to get the Hedoras. Them Hedoras. Them's his favorites. He's a little weird looking dude with two eyes that are going the wrong way, but his name's Hedora. So you're so funny. I love you so much. And in honor of you, I'm actually drinking.
Oh, shit. I was going to tell you what Max bought these James Stokoe pages I saw that were incredible. Did he show you those? Have you seen
those? He bought Stokoe Godzilla pages?
Yes. The cover.
Oh, gosh.
And the detail is shocking. Like, I feel like James Stokoe must be drawn with like a microscope or something. I don't understand. It's so tiny. The marks that he makes are so tiny.
You're killing me. But yes, I am drawing. I'm not drawing with a microscope. Mm. I'm drinking with a microscope. I'm drinking Sam Adams Boston Lager because I love it. Why else would you drink something if you didn't love it?
That is true. That is true.
Yeah.
What kind of coffee are you drinking, Tony?
I'm fighting off a cold. I have to beat it in 2 days because I'm going to the East Coast this weekend. So I'm having
Kenmore. Not to see us, but whatever.
I mean, I'll be in Harrison, New York. I'll be in Annapolis, and I'll be in Baltimore. If you guys
wait.
I'll see you.
Harrison.
Oh, yeah, comics. How far is it?
Oh, my God. It's like barely a half hour away.
You got to come out!
Not jealous.
I mean, I'm just saying, it's on Saturday morning.
What are you going to be doing there? Signing books? Selling stuff?
Yeah, I'll be signing at All Yeah Comics with Trish and Franco from All Yeah Comics. He did the variant cover for Feral Number 1 that they did exclusive at All Yeah Comics, and so we're going out there to sign books. And then we're doing the same thing at Third Eye Comics in Annapolis on Sunday, and then we're doing another spot called Dreamers and Make-Believers in Baltimore.
Wow.
A little East Coast tour in Boys to Men.
Now, all these stops you're making, are you like leaving little babies? Like is there gonna in like 10-15 years are there gonna be like a bunch of Tony Fleece looking like artists popping up?
Like Johnny Appleseed. Yes. I barely have been to make the comic books. I'm not leaving my seat across the country.
Jesus Christ.
I can pretend though. Yeah.
Yeah.
Any dates coming up with Agnes? I wasn't implying that. No.
Take it easy. I saw Agnes this weekend at WonderCon.
I love her. I really do.
I know you do. You gotta join TikTok if you like Agnes. She's all over the place on there.
I feel like I get a lot of Agnes on Insta, so I'm good.
I wonder if she's
yeah, but you don't get the lives. You don't get the lives on Insta.
I was on. She did the Kickstarter live on Insta, and I was there, or maybe it was a rebroadcast. I don't know, but it was the moment that her Kickstarter got funded, and she's the cutest damn thing in the world. That I would just like, I would watch no one else do that. Like, I love Tony, but if he had a countdown to his Kickstarter, I wouldn't watch it. But here I am looking at Agnes just sitting there talking, and then she gets all excited because her Kickstarter got fulfilled, and then she's crying a little bit, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't take it. You're so damn cute.
Well, me and Agnes would always, we were pretty much the same in as much as the workload that we took on was about the same. Like, we're both crazy like that. And then I always just thought it was hilarious how I have a personality like this, and then she has a personality like that. Like,
yes, she's very optimistic.
Barely surviving, and she's like, hooray!
Yep. And I also like the way she takes into account the opposite side of the table. She's like, hey, if you're going up to an artist's table, don't, like, plop your ass on the table or your bag or stuff. Like, she's very cognizant. Well, of course, because she works the other side of the table.
Yeah.
But not a lot of congoers think that, well, yeah. You know, and you know what? I love him. Jason does it all the time. He plops that portfolio down and just opens it wide open. And I'm like, that dude, like, what? But that's okay. Because you're spending hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars with this person. So I guess you could do that. But,
that's true.
Yeah.
I had one of those this weekend. Somebody came over and bought just a ton of original art. And Tone Rodriguez was sitting across the aisle from me. And he had been dealing with that guy. And he comes over and gives me a heads up before the guy comes over. And he's like, sorry. He's like, listen, this guy's going to be a huge pain in the ass, so just try and get rid of him as quick as possible. And I was like, oh, okay, geez. And so the guy came over, and I could sense immediately that he was going to spend a ton of money. Like, my spidey sense was tingling.
And, how could you tell?
I just got a vibe. I just saw the way he was looking at original art in like a bulk sort of way, and I was like, I think this is going to be a good thing.
So real talk, in the past, did you ever get that feeling when we walked up to your table?
No, I know exactly what's going on.
All right. Dap, what are you drinking?
Well, like I said, because it's been chilly and I'm trying to kill whatever might be trying to fight me, and because it's Tony, I am enjoying some Basil Hayden Dark Rye with a splash of seltzer.
Smooth.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yes. Extremely smooth.
Nice. Well, before we get into the comic talk, I think there's a base we need to cover. Unfortunate, but I think it needs to be addressed, right? We lost a member of our comics community this past week. A creator, a fan, a historian, just a guy who pretty much had his fingers in all aspects of creating, consuming, and loving the medium of sequential art. And that was
the best.
Ed Piskor. I don't know how to approach this because it's a weird situation. It's very odd. It's uncharted territory for me, at least, and I'm sure, you know, a lot of people are feeling that way, that it's just like, wait a minute. Something's not right. It's just it's off, and I'm sure you both do, and I have a boatload of opinions about everything that went down, but I don't think they mean anything in light of the loss of human life, and it's not just loss of a creative individual, because that's important. It is. There's not a whole lot of them out there. I mean, pound for pound, in aggregate with the rest of the population, it's the creative people that are the special ones. But not only was he a creative individual, but he was a human being. And I mean, wherever, whatever, I don't have a whole lot of words other than to say, right on. Ed, wherever you are.
I mean, I just think, like, well, first of all, if you or anyone you know is, like, having suicidal ideation, or if you're thinking about taking your own life, or if you're just feeling down, there's places you can call. You can call 988. That's just a hotline. You can just talk to somebody on the phone, right? Like, if that helps. I don't know much more, you know. Like, this is one of those things where you wish Jason was here because he's so eloquent and he usually has a good take on shit like this. But the thing about Ed was that he was just, you know, comic book artists have passed away, but they're not ubiquitous like that. Like, he's on, like, every time I launch my YouTube, he just pops up, you know, and they just started, like, Jim just started putting up kayfabe episodes again that they had stacked up. And so it's sort of like a reminder then that he's, you know, that he's not around. And it's just bizarre. It's just, you know, it's fucked. The week has been really fucked. And it made me think, as somebody who has really made my whole life these past, you know, several years about just only making comics, made me think, like, I got to take a look at what I'm fucking doing, you know? Like, I got... Not at all to make this tragedy about myself, but like, whenever something like this happens, you do step back and you go, like, Jesus Christ, what's going on? It's just
my first maybe my third reaction to this was to I DM Tom Scholey.
Okay, and I
was like, Tom, you okay? And then, like, he didn't reply immediately, but then I was like, oh, shit, what if he thinks that I'm checking in with him in hopes of, like, pumping him for information? Like, I'm trying to get, you know, because not precious little came out. It was just like Ed's sister said, yeah, he's dead. And then everybody was like, okay, well, I guess that's official. Like, it's still weird. Like, the fact that it happened on April Fool's Day still gnaws at me. It's, I don't know if Ed planned that. I don't know. I don't even know what to say. But what I'm saying is, I reached out to Tom, and then I was like, oh, damn. Maybe he thinks I'm just using him to get. And then I said, I immediately replied to him. I said, Tom, this is just, I just want to know how you are. Don't say anything other than what you, like, I paraphrasing my own self, but he was like, no, I understand. He goes, I'm doing okay. I mean, about as okay as I can be. He goes, we're still processing this, and that's it. And then I said, okay, I love you. Say no more. Yeah. If you need anything, I'm here, dude. Like, that's it. I don't want to know anything, because I wasn't fishing for information. I 100% care how Tom Scholey is doing in this. You know what I mean? Like, I'm, Tom's my dude. Jim is Jason's, and you know what I mean? Like, and so we pick favorites, and I just wanted to make sure Tom was okay. That's it. That's all.
It's definitely something that's going on, though. I mean, my father lost a friend to this a year or so ago, and I had a couple friends that almost did, you know. And I don't know if it's happening more lately just because of the, like, how dark things have gotten, or if it just, you know, maybe we're getting to the age where it starts to happen. But I don't know. It's very strange.
It is. I wish I understood it. I don't. Deb, you're quiet.
I am. No, you guys said what needed to be said on that. There isn't anything I can add without it going down some other avenues we don't need to discuss tonight. I feel for his family. I'll leave it there. But I am raising my glass to another comic professional, who I considered a fantastic artist because of everything that he worked on. I enjoyed, whether it's Green Lantern or Iron Man, or specifically Power Man and Iron Fist, or this little Falcon miniseries I never get to talk about, but Mark Bright, Quantum and Woody co-creator, passed away peacefully last week, and he worked long time Marvel and DC, icon, milestone, of course, I'm unfortunately I get to add him to the list of creators that I would have loved to have gotten a chance to shake his hand and thank him for all the good times.
Yep.
Yeah. Shitty week.
Little bit. Yeah, little bit. As far as comics go, especially from
some good comics,
especially from one of the companies that you semi-represent, Tony. I don't know if you had a chance, but did you manage to check out any of the Ghost Machine books that came out?
Oh, no, I didn't go this week because I was fighting off this illness.
Oh, this is true. Okay. All right.
Jeff Johns is also going to be on the East Coast this weekend, and that's my guy.
Well, he had not one but three new books come out on Wednesday. Yeah. And all under the Ghost Machine banner. And it was very surprising. One of the things I want to say about I bought and read all three, right? And I was amazed, impressed, and made me smile. That's a dapism, but it did. That none of these first issues used any of the pages from Ghost Machine number one. Like, you would think that would be a tryout book where they're like, oh, hey, if you like this, here comes the series proper. And then, you know, we'll just use the first five pages. And okay,
right.
All of the pages were brand spanking new. And I was like,
well, in some cases, especially in Geiger, they even reference the Ghost Machine special.
Yes,
so, like,
they do.
If you didn't pick that up, I'm not saying you're lost, but it was a great jumping on point to get you ready for the new line.
But I have to say, let's be honest, Gary Frank, did not put as much effort as the other two artists. Geiger's like 22 pages. Redcoat is 36, I think. And Rook Exodus is like 43.
Yeah.
Rook is 43. And they're all $3.99, Tony. It's crazy. They're really putting in the work. I guess they're wanting this to hit big, and I think it's gonna, because I was very surprised. I went in thinking a certain book was gonna be my favorite, and the one that I thought I wouldn't glom onto was my favorite.
Interesting.
Yeah, I thought Redcoat number one was the best of the three.
Huh.
Yeah. And you know me. I mean, let's be honest. I'm not a giant Hitch fan. I mean, the man has remarkable skill, but he usually draws things that I don't want to read.
Right.
In, you know, I won't be specific, but I've said it before. I think there's a sameness to Hitch's approach to whatever property he's working on. Like, if you've seen one really good rendered Hitch book, you pretty much have seen them all. But this is different because it's multi-era. There's a bunch of different locations and settings, and I just thought the character of Simon Pure. Do you know the story, Tony?
No.
It's kind of cool, and it plays to my sensibilities. This Simon Pure was a Confederate soldier at the end of the War for Independence. And so, persona non grata. So he's hiding, and he does what he does best is run and shirk responsibility and deflect blame. And so he's running from the Union soldiers, and he stumbles upon a Masonic ritual involving Benjamin Franklin, where they have Franklin on a table, and there's this thing going on with one of the attendees. They're all hooded, by the way, and one of the attendees is called the Grand Architect, so it's super Masonic. It's like every cliche that you've ever read about the Masons. How they're, you know, trying to take over the world. They're called the Founding Fathers, right, in this book. And they're just this nefarious. They're not. But they're a secret society. They are. The Masons are. But they're not nefarious. But if you know, conspiracy theorists would have their way, they would believe, you would be believing that the Masons were trying to take over the world. And in this book, they kind of are. So he kind of stumbles into this ritual and ends up gaining the power that was originally intended for Benjamin Franklin. So this Simon Pure guy is an immortal. He can't die. Well, he can die, and he does die in a multitude of ways, but he keeps coming back to life after a certain period of time. And he claws himself out of the grave, and he continues with his shenanigans and his thievery, and his he's not a nice character. Like, he's what was Ant-Man's name? Dap. The second Ant-Man, the third Ant-Man.
Eric O'Grady.
Eric O'Grady. He's a bit like Eric O'Grady. Like, he's salacious and flirtatious and steals and plays on people's sympathies and welches on things owed. Like, he's just not a nice guy. And he ends up becoming immortal. And in this book, why not? He dies, and when he comes back, he crosses paths with a young Albert Einstein. Like a kid version of Albert Einstein. It's such a fun book. And I think that
took him all of 3 days to learn English.
And I think the thing that I like about it the most is the other two were like, oh, it's so dark. And our situation's very dire. And in Geiger, it's like, you know, I'm dying from this radiation. These two control rods are the only thing that, you know, are saving me. But wait a minute, someone else had it and they got cured. Like, it's so downbeat. This book wasn't downbeat. Redcoat was fun. It was lively. It was energetic. It was nicely drawn. I just thought it was great. And I'm stunned. I never, ever would have thought that Redcoat would be my favorite of the three.
You definitely liked it more than I did. I didn't dislike it by any means. The art, it wasn't, obviously it's not, let me get to the credits. It's Hitch and Andrew Curry on ink, so it's not Paul Neary. The art reminded me of the last time I really enjoyed Hitch's work, which was with the Ultimates. Everything since the Ultimates, whether it was Age of Ultron or whatever he was doing with Ellis on the Batman stuff, I haven't been, or his Hawkman, I haven't been a fan of Hitch. You know, I haven't been a fan of the current look of Hitch. I think he does, you know, layouts, and I like his storytelling, but his line work I wasn't really digging these past few years. I like the look of Redcoat more so than I have of anything in recent memory by him. It is, of the three that came out this week, from Ghost Machine, yes, it is. It is the most fun and lighthearted. I can appreciate the opportunities of where we can go with this. I think Immortals are, you know, it's a cool idea. I dig it. Seeing history through the lens of someone like Simon Pure, who isn't, you know, he's everything Vince already said, and he may have good intentions. You know, he tells Betsy,
"Doubt it."
I was gonna make good, but you know, you just gotta give me time. But you know, it's just so I don't know if I'm gonna stick with him based on the type of character he may turn out to be, based on the snippet we got in the Ghost Machine special, I, like Vince, was not expecting. I wasn't really sure if I was even going to try the first issue based on those few pages, but I am glad I did. We got the review PDFs, and I really did enjoy Redcoat more than I expected to. It wasn't my favorite of the three, and it's weird because, yeah, when you look to, you have the timeline for the whole Ghost Machine line, for the unnamed, starting, of course, in 1776, because that's when Redcoat, Simon Pure, becomes immortal. But, you know, jumping ahead to 25 years from now. But I don't know. John seems to have a very depressing and cynical view of the future. And granted, the current climate of our country, let alone the world, it's not necessarily a reach for him to think this way, but between Geiger and which of course takes place on this planet, or Rook Exodus, which was my favorite of the three, which takes place off planet, it can be a bit depressing, so I'm looking forward to other offerings from Ghost Machine. But as far as what I dug about Rook Exodus was that the sci-fi bent to it and the space fair, but there's of course the animals. That everybody, that the wardens are connected to, but it also let off with a hell of a cliffhanger, and I was a bit bummed by those last couple of pages. But what really did kind of I realized, since it's a gatefold cut, a wraparound cover, even though Rook mentions, even though they mentioned Direwolf, we don't see that character in the first issue, even though she's on the back cover, so I was really hoping we'd get that. But, I don't...
I think she was in Ghost Machine number one, wasn't she? Briefly?
Probably briefly, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that, as far as the way... the whole the whole idea of it with I mean, you know, he's got his area, his city, the population one. It's a bit, it's lonely, and if I probably dwell on it too long, I'll end up in a dark place myself. So I kind of don't want to live in this book. But visually, Jason Fox art, of course, is the key,
right?
Yeah.
Johns is really smart, and he knows good collaborators when he sees them. And by good collaborators, I mean people that will do justice to his stories. And I think in Rook, I think the story's average. It's a, oh no, we got to get off this planet story.
Like, sure, yeah,
we've seen that a million times. And yep. And men and women controlling animals, like not a rare trope, but the fact that Fabak and Anderson rendered it like this, like that's the chef's kiss. I don't think if the book did not look this good, I would probably be out, only because we've seen it before.
Sure, and you know? And I have to get that. And while the story is not necessarily, I mean, you could have put. It doesn't have to be off planet. It could have been any time in history of these characters
right.
of these wardens and their friendships that they may form and what they're trying to do. But it's for me with this issue, or at least so far, it's the execution. It's very easy to peel it back and just kind of boil it down to what it is and just shrug it off or condemn it for just being that, but it's a shiny wrapper, and that's what has me interested for now. I might very well see through it in another couple of issues and be like, all right, I've been here and I'll wait for it to wrap up. But I thought visually I loved it, and I dig some of the concepts, because some of them, depending on, you know, how far you may go back with science fiction or some of the tropes within this book, within this issue, it might be, it's probably recipes you've tasted before, but there might be a couple things in here that are new to folks that aren't so knee deep in some of some of the ideas that John's cribbed from. But I really enjoyed it. And Geiger, of course, I mean, Geiger's also not new, because it was the first book that John's brought to Image, I think. So really starting this whole line.
Well, the magic worked, because now I'm ordering the frickin' hardcover that's solicited this month. So
that's right. I'm
like Mark number zero. They got me ground floor. Tony.
Yes.
Road stories. You got any?
From the road?
Yeah, well, that's where usually road stories come from.
Well, this really came out of nowhere.
Well, because I want to shift the focus to you, because we've been talking for a couple minutes.
I think it's fine to talk about Jeff Johns' accomplishments for a little while.
Yeah, there you go. How do you feel about Jeff Johns' accomplishments?
I'm very proud of him. He's he's a very sweet man, a talent. You know, I like that he's doing creator-owned comics. That's exciting to me. The road story. My favorite the road story is when I was early on in my career, Tom Rodriguez and I think it was just us, but maybe somebody else was there. I can't remember. We were doing a show in Kansas City Planet Comic Con. And we had driven there from L.A., which is a long, long drive. But back in those days, Tone was very obese, and he didn't like to fly places. He just drove everywhere. So we like rented a car and we drove out to Kansas City. And when we got there, I had lived in South Dakota when I first started making comics, so I had a lot of Midwest comic book friends from the short time that I had been in making comics out there. So I was excited to go back to the Midwest, because I could hang out with like Phil and Andy, and I think Tony Moore was out there, and Kevin Mellon, all these like the Midwest contingent of comic book creators. And so we got there. We'd been driving forever, and Tone got to the hotel, and So we had so the first night we tried to stay together, and we were sleeping in the room together, and Tone was snoring very, very loudly. And so I was just like, all right, you know what? This is fine. I'm going to just go sleep in the car, because I won't be able to sleep if, you know, if this is what's going on. This is like the first time we tried to stay in a room together. I later would figure out my system was like earplugs, headphones, white noise, could put the whole thing to sleep. But this time I was just like, I'll just go sleep in the car. So then I was sleeping in the car, but it was cold out. So Tone came up and got me, and he was like, look, buddy, he was a real good dude. He was like, I bought you a room. You don't have to sleep in the same room as me. I'll get you a room. Because I think the convention had bought him a room, but then he went in out of pocket to buy me a room too. And I definitely couldn't have afforded a room at the time if I had to get my own. So he definitely did a beautiful thing. So then the next night, we did the show, and then I went out with Phil and Andy and them, and Tone went to hang out with Michael Golden and some other people, because Tone loves Michael Golden. Who doesn't? But then while I was out, Tone called me up on the phone and he said, hey man, I had a friend who needed a place to crash and she's here and she had some argument with her boyfriend. She doesn't have a place to stay. So I told her she could stay in your room. And I was just like pissed, but also, he bought the room for me, so I couldn't really say anything. So I was just like, all right, I guess that's fine. But who is this girl? And he started to tell me about it, but I was just like, whatever, fine. So I hung out till late with the boys, and then I came back to the hotel room, and I very quietly tried to sneak into the room. I said hello, but the lady was already there sleeping. So like I just like tiptoed in. I saw there were just clothes strewn about now. So I'm just like, is she even wearing clothes? So I lay down, I go to sleep, and this is way pre, like, any sort of Me Too, anything, but I'm just like, this does not seem like a great look. I don't know who this woman is. I don't want to be in any sort of, like, compromising position. So I'm just going to sleep, you know, pants on, just try not to make any trouble. And so I did that, and then when I woke up in the morning, she was still sleeping. And I had to go to the bathroom real bad. But I was also just like, well, I also don't want to... I don't know if that's offensive or not to just take a huge shit while this lady's sleeping. so I just held on. I was like, you know what? I'll just wait till we get to the convention. Or maybe we'll stop somewhere. Stop at a gas station or something. So I took a quick shower, and she's still sleeping, and I head out of the room. And Tone's like, all right, you ready to go? And I'm like, let's stop at a gas station. I'm annoyed with them, you know? And so we go to stop at a gas station. They don't have a bathroom. And so I'm just like, well, I guess we'll just go to the convention center. And he's like, he could tell I'm pissed. And he's like, bro, what's going on? Why are you so pissed? And I'm like, why am I so pissed? Because you just have this lady fucking sleeping in our room with me. I can't take a shit in there, you know? Like, and he starts laughing. And I'm like, I don't even know who this girl is. And she's in a fight with her boyfriend. She's some old friend of yours. I don't know why she doesn't stay in your room. And he's like, she's not real. There's no lady. And there was no lady. Like, and another friend of ours had just concocted a scheme and scattered around on, like, ladies' underpants and jeans and stuff.
Oh, my God.
Like, a true prank.
So, wait, what was the... So, they made the lump underneath the sheets and everything?
Yeah, they did everything. Like, they were trying to,
that's brilliant.
They're trying to sneak out. And so then I had to take a shit at a convention, which is one of the top three things I never like to do.
The mysterious lady is not the prank. The taking the shit at the convention is the real prank. That's awesome.
He never could have planned for that. He didn't know.
No, but maybe he's an evil mastermind.
Yeah.
You know, Doom knows. He knows.
That's true. Yeah, he knew exactly what was going on. Yep. So that is my favorite From the Road story. Just a real hilarious prank gone wrong, I must say.
That is hilarious.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
A lot of trouble on the road in the early days. Now, I pretty much just go to a place and I do my thing and I leave. There's very little shenanigans.
Yeah. So, real talk. When does the social media blitzkrieg start winding down? Like, maybe Feral issue 4? Like, when do you feel it's safe to be just, like, not omnipresent? Because you are everywhere.
I am omnipresent. Well, I think the conventional wisdom is that, like, at issue 3, that's when it'll usually settle into what the numbers are going to be, you know? And so we're just trying to keep the numbers on that thing high enough up until this. We got numbers for issue 2, and it did well, and in the second printing sold well. And so it's like everything's going well, but it's just sort of like I don't want to have done all this work and then take my foot off of the gas right at the finish line.
Right.
So around issue 3, I think I will stop having to go as hard, hopefully. And the hope there will be that the fans will then sort of pick up the baton and run with it from there. You know, like, I don't have to make as much noise because hopefully other people will be making noise.
Right. Well, Becky from Comics on the Green.
Yes.
You do know her, correct?
I don't know if I'm sure I do.
You probably talked to her, but yes. She did a couple of images based on classic horror covers. Like, you know, the Bob Powell with the glass looking through the wine and the woman's face turns into she did that for Feral. It's a cat.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and I said, send them to Tony. He would be over the moon. And you know, she's British. That I don't know why that matters, but I said Tony's a great guy. Just send him to him. Oh, I'm so nervous. I'm like, oh, just do it. Just do it. So
well, did she post it online anywhere?
I told her to send them directly to you. So she definitely follows you. Maybe you don't follow back, so she can't do the social media stuff. But I will see her again, and I'll tell her, like, get on that, because now he's expecting them.
Now I am expecting it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there have been some the fans have already started to bubble up a little bit, and that's cool already. Like, we've been making this book Feral for so long that we didn't anticipate that people would become attached to the characters right away. You know, like, We put the book out, and I went to WonderCon this weekend, and already people were coming up and just going, like, telling me which one they'll be the most mad if I kill them.
Nice.
And so that's a good feeling. Also, I don't plan on really killing any of them, you know, at the jump. So that's I'm excited to see what all these people think of this book, because I think they just expect from Stray Dogs that I'm just going to murder these cats.
That's kind of what Becky said. Yes.
Yeah.
She said, I'm not getting attached to anyone because I know he will break my heart by the end of the book. And I was like, okay.
I'm going to try and do that without killing them. That's my job on this book.
Oh, nice. Insidious. It's great.
Let's see how we do.
But audience engagement's a wonderful thing. If you have, from the first issue, if you have people coming up to you saying, you kill this one and you're done, like, that's actually a compliment.
I just had today hilarious fan interaction. Somebody called me on my telephone. I always pick up because I think it might be business or something. And usually it's just junk, you know, like spam. But this kid called me up, and he was like, is this Mr. Fleece? And I guess my phone number had been on my website. And so I went and took it off my website. We had a quick chat. I said, thank you. You know, I'm glad he liked my comic. And then I went and took my phone number off my website. I don't know why it was on there. Why would it be on there?
Because back then, you know, you were hustling.
Well, it must have been from MySpace. You probably had it on there then.
It was on my store website.
I do remember seeing it there once.
Yeah.
I think it's funny that someone just called you out of the blue.
Perfect. Yeah, that's the best.
Yeah.
It's like old ads for CBG. It's like, you know, just calling up random people. Do you still have this for sale? So while we were in North Carolina after dinner, Friday evening, across the street was Capital Comics 2. So my sister and I went in. Actually, this little strip mall had a comic shop and an anime shop. And I mean, cosplay stuff in the back, but like, all tchotchkes, and they had the snacks and everything from Japan, like, towards the register, but, like, they had a bunch of books and notebooks and cookbooks. It was a nice little store. Going to the comic shop, immediately you get hit with that that paper aroma. I love that smell. It's a nice little shop. They had Feral on the new release rack, and on the drive home Sunday, I was telling her about Stray Dogs and Feral, and I don't know if you ever really gave us, and you don't have to do it tonight, obviously. I don't know if we ever really got the Tony Fleece origin story, because she was asking me, what possessed you, what made you want to get into comics, what made you want to draw. And I told her about it in my lifetime and how we met through Pat and that New York Comic Con back in, like, I don't know, 06, 08, something like that. But it was, so I wasn't going to speak for you, but I told her, you know, well, I'll see what he wants to give up, but I am going to have to, I think, get her the trade of Stray Dogs, and because I'm not giving up my issues, and I'll get the collections of Feral as they come out for her. But it was, and I told her about, I told her, oh, because we were also, because she saw My Little Pony comic on the shelf, not one that you drew, but she talked about, and so that was the other connection. I told her about some of the con stories with that. But it was a neat brother sister bonding moment. But I enjoyed talking about it to somebody who hadn't heard about it yet. But yeah, I was just, I told her I would pass along her compliments as far as all the "oh, that's so cool" things she was saying every time I would talk about something from one of the books.
What were you and the sister doing in North Carolina?
Dad, it was mostly for Dad and my stepmother are going to be moving back north soon. Dad got hit with a health scare a few months ago. So my brother went down last weekend. My aunt went down earlier in the month. Alex had to go down. We basically had to sign some paperwork and everything like that. So power of attorney, shit like that. So while my father had to deal with some treatments, I was going to go with him to do that, while my sister was going to stay at the house with my stepmother because she's dealing with Alzheimer's now. So this way Carol could keep an eye on Lydia and Dad and I. And this way I would also give Dad some time away from the house because he's been taking care of her 24/7 while dealing with his own thing. So it wasn't a vacation. It wasn't for a lot of good time. It was great to see people, but and I saw our boys Cliff and Justin while I was down there Saturday. But it was mostly for family / health stuff.
Did you and your sister drive over there together? Did Renee go?
No, Renee stayed home because of the pets. But we and I also think Renee isn't ready to see Lydia the way she is now, but she took the train up here and we left here Wednesday. We made great time driving down, even with that bridge being out and with the rain and occasional downpours all along the way down. And then even Easter Sunday we drove back. And that was pretty much smooth sailing until we got to the George Washington. But I don't mind flying. I hate TSA and the whole thing dealing to get to the plane. And this way, because Carol was originally planning to take the train, and so was I at one point. But I was just like, you know what, fuck it. I'll have company in the car then, at least. And so we just took the drive, this way we're not held captive anywhere. If either of us needed to dip out, we could definitely do that. So it was nice to just, you know, chill in the car for a bunch of hours and I was flipping around on the radio, and she's jotting down songs so she can play them in the office. The more family-friendly, kid-friendly tunes, some of the songs that I was playing wouldn't be able to be played in the office. But no, it was that we haven't really spent that much time together in a good while, so it was nice.
That's nice. Yeah, I like taking a trip with my siblings like that. Sorry, I took us on it. I wanted to know more about that. Also, in a weird week like this, I feel like it's important to check in, you know.
I appreciate that.
Talk real talk.
It's nice of you, you human being.
Yeah. I like when people hear about Stray Dogs or Feral and they're not necessarily comic book people and it gets them excited. I think that those books are gateway comics, and I like making those because that sort of hopefully opens up, you know, who you can sell them to and who might buy them.
I don't think there's a magic recipe. I think they're just very, very good ideas. Like, the concepts are just very, very good concepts.
Yeah, but they also don't have anything. They're not, I mean, they're genre, they're horror.
Sure.
And they're sort of genre in that they're sort of like 90s animated style, but neither of those things are specific to comics necessarily where it seems like there's any sort of barrier to get into it. Whereas, like, if it's a superhero thing, I feel like people think that they have to know a lot more about the world that they're dipping into.
I think these days we tend to overanalyze stuff. Like, I'm getting to the point where even the most articulate commentary on art kind of turns me away because it's like there's a part of me that just says shut the fuck up and enjoy it. Like, is it good? Is it fun? Does it make you happy? Right? Not is it a bridge between the neoclassicists and the post? Like, stop! I don't want to know that. Love it for what it is, and I see it happen. The older I get, the less tolerance I have for these witticisms that people are trying to write the pull quote, right? That shit just turns me right off. And it's not just comics. I listen to a lot. I mean, you know the podcasts I listen to, like the Severin podcast, or I listen to a lot of genre film podcasts, and they do the same thing. Like, they're trying to find deep sociological related information in The Warriors. Okay, it's maybe there, but it's just a fucking great movie. Like, that's all you need to say.
I like it when somebody goes deep on something that I've made, because then I'll just get to go like, oh, I guess we did do that. You know, like.
Thank you for writing my language for me. All right, everybody. Hey, thank you for being here with us one more time around. Remember, if you want to get your books and get them cheap, not only books, well, a whole bunch of books, OGNs, manga, omnibus editions. What did I leave out? Trade paperback collections. Just go to cheapgraphicnovels.com because they have all that cheaply. And take a look at our Patreon page, patreon.com/11oclockcomics. We have recently retooled it. You have two options. It's like a black and white cookie. You can either buy half of the cookie or the whole cookie. It's very simple. You get downloads of vintage fanzines. You get original pages. You get cover images. What else do we have? We have a focus on a singular artist every month. It's called EOC Loves Ellipsis. This month, it's P. Craig Russell. So every day for this month, you get a cover or interior page that P. Craig Russell touched. It's just joy. And Jason's there too, if that's your thing. So, patreon.com/11oclockcomics. In your travels, I don't know if you're reading this book, but it's a great title, but it waxes and wanes. It's great, and then it's really good. And the last arc was really good because Doug Braithwaite was on it, but this arc is great because who came back to Conan but Roberto De La Torre.
Yay!
Yeah. I don't want to cast shade on Doug Braithwaite because I like Doug's work a lot, but I think Roberto was born to draw Conan because he's walking in the footsteps of Big John Buscema. And it looks pretty effortless to me. If you said that this was found in a flat file somewhere in the Buscema basement, I'd be like, I believe you, because it looks a lot like Big John. But the book is great. It's from Titan. It's $3.99. Conan the Barbarian. It's on issue number 9. That's the one where Roberto De La Torre comes back. And it's like a Marvel Conan, but with the occasional breast. Like, it's not super explicit. When Titan acquired the rights to Conan, they were kind of pumping it like Conan Uncensored. But it's really not that explicit. It's a little bit of female anatomy now and then. And this story, which is called it's called The Age Unconquered, Suffered Not the King of Wonders. Jim Zub is writing it. But Jim Zub's really smart because Conan does something in the previous story that transports him 80,000 years to the past before the fall of Atlantis. And this story has ties to Robert E. Howard's Tower of the Elephant. And when you say Atlantis, who do you think of from Robert E. Howard? There should only be...
Is it Kull?
Yes, King Kull.
Okay.
He is from the time of Atlantis.
That's right.
And I'm not going to say any more. So you should read this, because it's like chocolate, peanut butter, yummy. Roberto De La Torre, Jim Zub, it's great. Conan, Titan. It's awesome. You should read it.
It is awesome.
If you're a Conan fan, you need to be reading this.
I mean, it's true. If you are a Conan fan, I don't know why you wouldn't be already picking it up.
Well, yes.
Or I mean, and Titan, I mean, they're putting them all out. I mean, they're putting out the original Marvel run. They're putting out like anything that they can put their hands on with Conan. They're reprinting.
I don't blame them, because it seems the license for Conan is very fleeting.
Yes.
I mean, if Marvel couldn't hold on to it, I don't know.
I mean, I don't know too many properties that have been at more publishers than Conan. But
Nexus?
Yeah, I am a couple of issues behind. I'm hoping to get to the comic shop maybe. Maybe this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you agree. The Braithwaite stuff was fine. It was good.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But I mean,
yeah, I'm super happy to hear that.
Yeah,
Del Toro's back on it. This pretty much year one miniseries wrapped up. Wesley Dodds, The Sandman, by Robert Venditti and Riley Rossmo, colors by Ivan Sencia, letters by Tom Napolitano. It wasn't really until this issue that this really kind of hammered home the year one attitude, because there are moments during the big reveal when Wesley is face to face as Sandman, face to face with the mastermind behind it, and he's just I understand he's a pacifist and he behaves a certain way, but there's some, maybe not insecurity, there's an unsureness about himself, so which obviously reading the Wagner Sandman Mystery Theater stuff and other Sandman stories over the years, I wasn't really expecting to see, but this is again to highlight the golden age for DC with this and Green Lantern and the Flash, and it's also, they're not subtle about it being a beginning, because the last page teases you for what is to come, because there's a knock on Wesley's back door with a bunch of other characters that he will know very well as the years pass. But I didn't even start the Flash one, and I'm only about halfway through the Green Lantern one, but
of, I really, really like what Venditti and Rossmo did with this. So I don't know if, I haven't checked the DC Connect, so I don't know if, I'm sure the collection has been solicited, but whether it has or hasn't, get your hands on it if you weren't reading the series on its own. It is slightly open-ended, so buyer beware. But as far as a nifty little intro slash origin story with some fantastic art, you can do way worse than Wesley Dawes, the Sandman from DC Comics. So that is my new travels tonight.
All right, in your travels, I don't even know if you can get this thing, but I was at WonderCon this weekend. My buddy Ben, who works for Bad Idea, gave me a copy of this, the Hero Trade 4th Anniversary Special. It just represents the first two Hero Trade stories, which I assume are available in other Bad Idea comics, or the first one was like that ash can that they sent out that sort of kicked off the Bad Idea comics, the whole deal. But it's David Lapham and it's Matt Kent. I'm sure you guys have all talked about it on here before. Have you talked about this already?
The edition that you have, no.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the edition doesn't really make too much of a difference, although I think it's in color and the original was in black and white. Colors by Bill Crabtree. But yeah, it's just a kick-ass, like, you know, superhero crime story by David Lapham, Matt Kent. A guy gets his hands on the body of a superhero and he starts, you know, parceling off pieces of it to sell to the highest bidder. And it's fun. It's like, it's the kind of grimy superhero stuff that I dig. And I had no idea that's what this was about. I didn't know that's what the Hero Trade meant. This is the 4th anniversary special, so finally, 4 years later, I understand what the title of this book means. This guy's selling off parts of a superhero. And I guess, looking at the back of it, there's going to be like a collection at some point, because there's like, you know, like 200 pages of this Hero Trade that they've just been putting together. I don't understand how they're... nobody understands the Bad Idea business model.
No. The model, yeah. Business, in air quotes, yeah.
But at some point, there will be a collection of this, and I will read it, because I love David Lapham, and I dig Matt Kent, and I would like to read more of this.
Their saving grace is that their comics are so good.
Yeah.
I mean, if they were, I don't know, Xenoscope, everybody be like, whatever. Nobody cares. Do your little antics in the corner. But their comics are really good, so I guess you got to put up with the balloon animals to get to the cake, right?
I think at this one, if you just went to the panel, they gave you a copy of this thing at WonderCon. So,
you know. Wow. Wish we knew someone at WonderCon, Dap.
You guys can have mine. I've read it now.
No, we're good. We're good. Hey, everybody, and you're good, too. Thank you for listening to this. We'll be back next time. Do yourself a huge favor. Go buy some comics, preferably Uncanny Valley, which is coming out next week, number one. Dave Wachter, Tony Fleece. Who else is on it?
Who is the letterer? Shit, now you've got me in trouble.
Oh.
I love it when I can get friends in trouble. So, Dave... You said Dave, we both said that Dave is his color art is his own. So great, which is
he's doing his own colors. There's only one other person on this book. And it's not Troy Petrie, who letters Army of Darkness forever. It is...
Tony's getting so big. He doesn't even know who works on his books.
Boy.
Hold on.
I feel like a real asshole right now.
No, you don't.
Pat Russo.
Russo. You said Pat.
So... We did it. We got there. I remembered it. It wasn't David Price.
Nice.
Good job.
Pat Russo, beautifully lettered by Pat Russo, and the sound effects by Dave himself. So they're sort of doing a two-hander, nice. Working in concert with one another.
It's like DC in the 70s all over again.
Yeah.
So do that, and then come back here and listen to us, because we'll probably be talking about it. So in the meantime, say goodnight. I don't have anything queued up, so I'm going to make it fast. David!
Ooh.
Good night.
I don't have anything queued up, so I'm going to make it fast.
David.
I think that was pretty much on the mark.
Right, it was.
Right. Yes, we love you people. Get out of here. Tell them you love them.
Night.
So much.
Eventually, Jason will be back.
That's it for that one.